And if you're a New Zealand music fan, and you particularly like songs written by women, then where would you go to find more of them and expand your repertoire, particularly if you wanted to go back to the 1970s to great songs like this one? Or maybe you've got more of an 80s vibe and you like songs like this one. Yes, everything from Sweet Inspiration by the Yandel Sisters to Peking Man, Room That Echoes, the online music library Audio Culture has put together a definitive list of top songs written by New Zealand women. 30 years of the chart-topping songs by women who graced New Zealand's charts from 1975 to 2005. There's a link to this new part of the library on our website. Click on it, read all the stories of each hit and listen to them as well. And Renee Jones from Audio Culture joins us now. Hi there.
Hello.
Hey, why 30 years? Why this particular era?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, you know, because the charts have gone on obviously a lot longer than that. But we did it because 1975, where we began, was the official beginning of the New Zealand music charts. Before that, They weren't structurally compiled. There was a singles chart, but the albums were done by radio stations around the country, so that was a little bit haphazard, I would imagine. So in 75, that's when they put a survey together to send out to the record stores and said, right, you guys write down how many songs or how many singles and how many albums you've sold. And that made it a lot easier to keep track of what was happening.
So a great starting point for the story of modern New Zealand music.
Yeah, basically, for the tracking of it.
And remind people, what is Audio Culture, the website that you work with?
We are the Noisy Library of New Zealand Music. Basically, we're kind of a historical and archival site telling the stories of the musicians and all the people behind the scenes that have created New Zealand music. So it ranges from the very beginnings of pop music and rock and roll right till we sort of have a five-year cut-off. So if you've been around for more than 5 years, then we'll, if we have time, we'll have a look at you.
Why Audio Culture? What is the purpose of having a site like this?
It's a treasure trove of stories, and most people to some degree love music, and it's also shaped their lives. And you can also track social history by what music is saying at each particular era. So it's really great. We tell the stories of those eras and those music movements and those artists.
And what's your sort of story with Audio Culture? How long have you been involved?
About 18 months now. I'm the publicist, so I kind of find the cool stories that we have and try and get people to read them.
Okay.
But I've been a New Zealand music fan for many years. I've worked for Festival Records and Flying Nun and BFM and just basically a Kiwi music obsessive.
You were with Flying Nun when Headless Chicken's George went to number one.
This is correct. That was so exciting. I think it was Flying Nun's only number one single, so we were all a little bit beside ourselves at that point.
Yeah, okay. And we will come to that. But as you say, New Zealand music fan, you've been a DJ on 95 BFM for how long?
30 years this year.
Wow, yeah. That's good.
It's a while.
What is that, 1989?
Yeah, 89 I started.
Do you a specialist show?
I do a show on Friday nights called The Gang of Four, so it's sort of like a mixed bag of maybe older tunes that people haven't heard for a while.
Okay. And we said we're looking at female songwriters and singers in New Zealand from 1975 to 2005. Why do you stop there?
Basically, the landscape changed dramatically after that point. There was a lot of illegal downloading already started. Streaming was coming into play. iTunes launched in 2006. So the roadmap kind of changed from being sales that you could track easily to the crazy world of streaming and downloads and what have you. So it was a whole different methodology of tracking the way that synced music was sold.
So what can we learn by looking at this period from 1975 to 2005?
What I thought about just today, actually, it's really interesting. I mean, obviously the amount of women on the chart has grown. And I do think that reflects our social history as well in terms of the place of women in New Zealand society overall. And when I looked at it at the very beginning, if you only have one song a year by a woman, that means every other song in the top 10 for that whole year was by male artists. And you kind of think, well, you know, that's not a lot of women being represented.
Mm.
But then it does improve, and it's exciting to see little milestones that are marked along the way.
What was the qualification for entry into your list?
You had to get into the top 10, basically, of the singles or the albums chart. Okay. There were a lot of other people that made it into the top 40, but not quite the top 10. I think the top 10 really shows a mark of success in terms of an artist's career.
A commercial hit.
Yeah, a commercial hit.
And not all for songwriting. I think Sweet Inspiration by the Yandel Sisters, there was a US hit first.
It was. That was the time when, I mean, that was going on for quite a long time at that point, I think even from the 40s and 50s, where New Zealand artists would reinterpret international hits for the New Zealand market, and that was still definitely going on at that point.
Did they make an impact, the Yandel Sisters?
Enormous impact, actually. They had a massive career. They were given a Pacific Music Award Lifetime Achievement Award in 2007, and, yeah, they're just enormously respected. They did lots of work with lots of different people.
Okay. So the first locally composed song to reach the top 10 charts by a woman was a few years away. Was that Sharon O'Neill?
Yes, Sharon O'Neill with a track called Don't Say No to Tomorrow. She wrote it. Sharon's amazing because she wrote so much of her own material. And it was great. But this was a song that I think she already had tucked away. However, I think John McCready wanted the TV people were anyway, and the record companies were looking for a telethon song. And she had this little song that she'd written, and they said, well, how about you just sort of redesign it a little bit and make it a telethon, you know, jingle. And she did, and it became immensely popular. And I guess that shows the power of television at that time as well, because, I mean, who didn't watch telethon?
Yeah.
And everyone would have heard that song.
Okay, let's have a listen to it now.
Cast your riches aside, another day will come.
Not her most famous hit. In fact, I haven't come across that one before, but it's certainly of the era, isn't it?
It really is. And no, it's not her most famous hit, and I suppose it's just because it was everywhere at that particular time.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that her songs like Maxine and Asian Paradise didn't actually reach the top 10, but they were hugely popular. I'm pretty sure they got very good radio play as well, but they didn't actually sell as singles, which is interesting.
Uh-huh. So that was Don't Say No to Tomorrow by Sharon O'Neill. Renee Jones from Audio Culture is in, telling us about some of the female hit makers in New Zealand between 1975 and 2005. So what happened in 1981?
Well, that's country. actually, I couldn't tell you exactly when that particular show started, but I imagine it was around about that time. Anyway, and I remember being a kid at the time, and every single household in New Zealand, I'm sure, watched That's Country.
Mm.
And you can tell, again, the popularity of television with a lot less choices of TV, that songs that were on That's Country just became massive, massive hits. And luckily,
that even if you didn't like country music, there was just nothing else that you could watch.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
that's right. Or maybe you became to love it because of that, I don't know.
Mm.
But So Patsy Rigger got in with Lay Down Beside Me in 1981. And then the following year, Suzanne Prentice had a hit with When I Dream, and it also that was played on That's Country. So there you go. Patsy Rigger's song Beautiful Lady, probably her best known one, and that was also on a TV show a few years later, but that didn't actually make the top 10 either. So it's interesting looking at people's buying patterns.
This one reached number 3. It's Patsy Rigger and Lay Down Beside Me.
I've spent my life looking for you, finding my way wasn't easy to do, but I knew there was you all the while, and it's been worth every mile.
It's Patsy Rigger. Quick shout out to Rosie Rigger Cuddy, who does some great work in New Zealand music and other areas. I think she's Patsy's daughter or niece or something. Hi, Rosie, wherever you are. There was another long wait for another woman in the top 10. So that was Patsy Rigger was 1981, I think. And then it was 1985 that we got our next one.
Yeah, I mean, I think there might have been a couple of others in between. I've just sort of highlighted the ones that I think are worth mentioning. So 1985, but this is a totally different kettle of fish. And this is a pop, real pop song. Peking Man, Room That Echoes.
It was number one for ages.
It took the country by absolute storm.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
What was it about that song?
I'm thinking, I mean, it is a really great, catchy song. Also, it had a cool video.
Yeah.
A really cool video.
Dancing around.
Silhouettes and 80s graphics. And I think it was one of the first times that in New Zealand we'd seen a video like that.
Yeah.
So people loved it.
Yeah. We heard a bit of that at the start, and then we go to famous Shona Lang.
Yes. Now, Shona Lang made a little comeback at this point. She had been very, very young, and she won the New Faces competition. I think it was in 1973. Mm. She had that beautiful song, 1905, which...
I'm not sure if I know that one.
Oh, it's a lovely song. It's definitely worth looking up. And so she had a couple of hits when she was basically a teenager. Then... And also, just out of interest, she was the very first woman to be on the charts once they became official in 1975 with a song called I Love My Feet, which if anyone remembers, it's a little bit of a novelty item, but it's quite cute.
Incredible.
Yeah, but then she came back with, in the 80s, they sort of reworked her sound and got the electronics and the keyboards and really flashed it up, and it sounded amazing with her songwriting skills and that production. She made a really big comeback.
And that famous violin riff, eh?
That's right, it's amazing, isn't it?
Let's do a bit of a listen. Had Shona Lang as a guest on our show before, and we've chatted about that song and the journey she took after that. She's an incredible songwriter. still got a great voice as well. Renee Jones in from Audio Culture playing a few of the big hits for women on the New Zealand charts. So 87, 88 was a pretty big breakthrough year.
Yes, things were moving along a lot more quickly for the female artists at this point. Adija, Watching You, got to number three. And you had the fan club. I don't know if people remember the fan club, fronted by a lady called Aisha. And then we had... Somebody will remember. The Holidaymakers were huge. Sweet Lovers was a massive, massive, massive single.
That was a cover, wasn't it?
It was a cover. I can't remember who did it.
No, look it up. Sweet Lovers in the Night.
I should know.
They had, and that had like steel drums or something on it.
Yeah, it was really sort of tropical sounding and kind of a really nice summer vibe to it.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was the year when The Cat's Away really did big things with Melting Pot, another cover, obviously. But they were kind of a female supergroup. And one interesting thing about them is I read Debbie Harwood from the band. She wrote a little piece on audio culture about what it was like to be a woman artist in those days. And all of the women in When the Cat's Away had their own solo careers, however, or they were part of bands, but they were getting frustrated because to get their own music heard, it was very, very difficult. So that's why they all decided to come together and join a band. So that they could actually be taken a wee bit more seriously as female artists.
Okay, breaking news, Sweet Lovers in the Night, originally by Bill Withers.
Oh, Bill Withers. Oh, fantastic. I love Bill.
We'll do a bit of Adija.
Yeah.
This is went to number three, and it's Watching You. Adija, remember Time Makes the Wine as well. It's another one, big one of theirs.
It was a lovely song, yeah.
They're actually in here recently with their new single Every Night, which is worth looking up on the RNZ website if you didn't catch it. Great track. Adija, rnz.co.nz/Jessie, or just search Adija on the main website. So that was Adija. And then you mentioned When the Cat's Away. And hello, Diane Swan, who's still a great friend of the show and regular contributor in the afternoons. And then... Fan Club.
Yes, so Fan Club were a really cool pop group with the lead singer came from Malaysia, which actually worked really well. It meant that they managed to get a really big following here and overseas as well. And this is where we start seeing some of our artists starting to make international breakthroughs as well. So Fan Club got some Malaysian chart action and some attention in the US. And then Margaret Ehrlich carried on doing really well. And her song Escaping got to number one in New Zealand and then broke into the Australian top 20. And Jenny Morris had She Has to Be Loved, which got to number three here and got to the top 10 in Australia as well. So there was starting to be like a trans-Tasman sort of crossover thing going on, which was cool.
Forgive my ignorance, was Margaret Ehrlich Peking Man?
Yes, that's right. So she broke off from Peking Man and then established her own career, which did extremely well in Australia.
And then Melting Pot, of course, was a huge hit for When the Cat's Away.
Mm. So, people are starting to make roads overseas now, which is kind of cool.
Keen to hear this one from Fan Club then, see if I recognise it.
This is
from 1989.
Hey you.
it's actually not ringing any bells for me.
No, I think it was a radio hit, and I can imagine it going down well in the clubs, but it's not played terribly often anymore.
Yeah, Renee Jones from Audio Culture playing some of the big songs by females in New Zealand on the New Zealand charts. I was just looking up Margaret Ellis. There's heaps about her on Wikipedia. And she seems to be based in New South Wales now. So she went to Aussie and did pretty well, like won an ARIA award and things.
Yeah, and I think she's remained there ever since.
Oh, when was the last time she was on RNZ? We should look her up.
Yeah.
Jodie Vaughan, where does she fit in?
She was from the country line of singers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I expect she didn't get a song in the top 10, otherwise we would have...
No, she had a number one album, though, Together Again with Brendan Dugan and Gray Bartlett.
Ah, possibly because she was with two chaps.
Maybe.
I think that it means that rules her out of this particular timeline.
It's funny, I know most of these songs because RTR Countdown, right?
Yeah. That's right. I mean, that was huge. And having a video definitely helped as well.
Yeah. To Sir With Love.
Nairi. Mm. Yes, that's right.
That was a big hit, eh?
It was a really big hit.
What would that have been, 1990?
Yeah, around about then, I'd say.
Okay, what else was happening around this time?
So, around heading into 1991, there was another shift again because this is when New Zealand On Air began their video funding scheme.
Yeah.
So, obviously, artists were making videos, but Murray Kamak of Southside Records actually was one of he was one of the protagonists of this, and he said, you know what? I think he'd probably noticed that songs with videos tended to do well, and how about you guys? You know, give us some money to make some videos and then you'll find that you have bigger hits on your hands. And I think that worked.
Funny how far $500 will go, eh?
It is. Yeah.
And it creates this whole history that wouldn't otherwise be there.
Like a visual record as well. And, and it really did help to promote songs.
Moana and the Moa Hunters.
Yes.
Were recognised recently. Was it at the Silver Scrolls?
It was at the Tate Music Awards. Tate, yeah. Yes. So they won the Classic Record of the Year is the name of the award for the, album? Yeah, that this came from. And they...
Tahi,
yes. So they were a breakthrough group as well, making sure that they did promote Te Reo. And, yeah, I mean, they really were pioneers in terms of doing that. And Black Pearl, again, is a cover. However, they managed to make it their own and put a New Zealand twist on it. And, Moana's amazing. She's still doing incredible things now.
Yeah, she is. Hi, Moana. She regularly texts me during this show.
Oh, excellent.
Let's listen to a bit of Black Pearl.
Black Pearl. Black
Black Pearl by Moana and the Moa Hunters. Jesse Mulligan with you, 1 to 4pm. And Renee Jones from Audio Culture is my guest for this Tuesday music feature, looking at successful female musicians. Someone's just complained about me calling them females rather than women. I always think it sounds funny when you say, like, women doctors, because you'd never say men doctors, you'd say male doctors. Anyway, I'm sure you and I can now take that offline. What about Debbie Harwood, says Ant in Wellington. It's a great song she had, If That Will Make You Happy. Did it ring any bells?
It does, but did it get into the top 10?
Maybe not.
Although, if it did, do let us know and we'll add it to our list.
Aisha is now a politician in Malaysia.
Seriously? Mm. That's fantastic to know.
Yeah, that's wow. Aisha from Fan Club. And a lovely text from Angela. This is so great. Thanks, Jesse and Renee. The music of my childhood. As a kid, I never gave a thought to local musicians versus huge international celebrities. So I'm learning a few things and I'm compiling a Spotify list of music I want my kids to grow up listening to. So you've given me a few more to add.
Oh, that's so neat.
Cheers, Angela. 2101 to get in touch. Okay, a couple of other honourable mentions. Annie Crummer.
Yes, Annie Crummer.
Huge radio hits, eh?
Yeah, that's right. No, she did well. I guess she first came on the scene when she did the backing vocals for Today.
For Today,
with the Netherworld Dancing Toys. I mean, she'd been singing since she was two, apparently. So she was always made to sing, but I guess it's just a matter of getting picked up on. So people really noticed her then, and then she started sort of beavering away on her own songs.
I remember she was a headline act in the short-lived music festival Strawberry Fields out near Raglan. Shout out to her and else who went to that music festival.
That's right.
Yeah. That would have been 92, 93.
About this time.
Hello, Jan Howeregel. The Way I Feel, huge hits.
Yes.
Both on student radio that I was involved in.
Yeah.
Sort of, bit of a crossover hit.
Total
as well.
Total crossover hit, yep.
Jan was on this show recently chatting about this. Margaret Ehrlich with Boy in the Moon. And I've discovered, this happens to me occasionally, that I did chat to Margaret Ehrlich. It was almost 3 years ago now, and she came on to talk about that Peking Man album, so you can find that on the website. So let's talk about Headless Chickens. How different was this band?
This was very different. And this is, I guess, when possibly the videos really started making a difference as well. I mean, that's just my opinion. It was just such a neat video and very compelling. I mean, it was a great song as well. And I remember...
Do I remember this right? Did they win Battle of the Bands?
They won the Wryneck Rock Award. I think it was 1985. And that was before Fiona McDonald joined, so the first sort of incarnation of Headless Chickens. But yes, they did. And it was a bit of a surprise because they were so very alternative compared to the other bands that had entered.
The Wryneck Rock Award.
The Wryneck Rock Award. Mm. Wonderful. Wonderful beer.
Yeah, along with the Benton & Hedges Fashion Awards, right?
Yeah,
back
that's
in
right.
those days.
You couldn't do that now, could
no
you?
No way.
No. So, I mean, Fiona McDonald was the lead singer on this particular track, so we're looking at, you know, songs where the women are the mm-hmm. front and centre of a track. And it's just an amazing song, too. It's really powerful. And actually, it reminds me of my time when I was at Flying Nun, and the record companies used to do little promo gimmicks. So when you had a song that you wanted, you were hoping would get in the charts. It wasn't bribery or anything. It was just like a gimmick. You'd send out little promo packages, to do with that particular artist.
Right.
Like I remember going into a store. We didn't do Britney Spears, but I remember going into a store and seeing a whole bunch of tins of asparagus spears sent out to the retailers because they wanted Britney Spears to go on the chat. It's like, right, okay.
That's what we're up against. Were you sending out KFC or anything?
I can't remember what we did for George. I'm racking my brain trying to think what you could do for George. But if anyone out there used to work for Flying Nun with me and Festival and you remember, let me know.
2101 is the text number. What did it mean to the band for this to go to number one?
Oh, enormous, just enormous things, I suppose. Yeah, just because that label had been around for so long and everyone loved it so much, but to get a number one was something else.
Okay, here's a reminder what the song was. Headless Chickens featuring Fiona McDonald and George. Some great stuff from Straw People a couple of years after that as well with her on vocals.
That's right.
Someone wanted me to mention Jay Clarkson. That name mean anything to you?
Oh, yes. Breathing Cage and her own material. Yeah, she's great.
Another Flying Nun name.
Yep.
So then suddenly something happened and it became less unusual for a female artist, particularly a solo female artist, to do well in the New Zealand charts. And one of the big names that changed that was Bec Runge, right?
Yes, that's right. I mean, and
what was different about Bec?
I don't know. I mean, she's amazing. The beauty and the simplicity of her songs really caught people, I think.
Yeah.
Because I remember the first time I ever heard Driver thinking, wow, that's an incredible song.
Me too.
Yeah.
And not to take anything away from her, but were the conditions perhaps more right in 1996 than they were in 1986 for a talented female musician?
I think so. I think definitely the doors were opening, and I guess the record companies were realising that it was worth betting on some of these female artists, on some of the women, and they started to put real money and big promotional campaigns behind them. And I think it, everyone in the country kind of got to hear the song and got to love it and buy it.
I just want to mention, you've got a note, Moisner here.
Oh, yes. That was another one from that year as well. That was, I think she was from the Urban Pacifica Collective. Mm-hmm. Just another mention of somebody who got into the top 10. But okay. her career wasn't terribly long, unfortunately.
But Bec Runge, massive album here in New Zealand. It did pretty well overseas on the back of a couple of inclusions, a couple of soundtracks, I think, helped.
Yes, that's right.
Now 26 million streams for Sway on Spotify.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And here's that beautiful song that both Renee and I first sort of set up and took notice of. It's a bit of Drive.
I know it's
so pure, that voice, isn't it?
And the lyrics too are amazing, Concrete Coloured Skies.
Yeah, and you can hear that guitar so beautifully too.
Very clear.
That song popped up in the Daffodils movie. Did you see that movie?
I haven't seen it yet. I need to see it.
Yeah,
I
as a music
to.
Lover. Yeah. It's a great version of it.
And that album went 7 times platinum, which is absolutely insane.
Annie Crummer opened for Michael Jackson in the History Tour, according to one person.
Oh, yeah. That rings a bell.
And Shona Lang is playing at Flat White on the 2nd of August. Don't miss that.
Don't miss it. I saw her playing in a cafe a couple of years ago. She's great.
Okay, we're into the late 90s now, and a couple of bands to mention. Deep Obsession. Now, I was on More FM at the time, and they were like...
Did you thrash them?
We did, yeah. But they actually set records for the numbers of hits that they had.
They Now, and it's interesting you say that you were on More FM, because this is when the radio play started to come into account. So the amount of time...
Without any strong-arm tactics, you know, yeah, it was just suddenly...
So you've got, you're a good example of witnessing that, that a song that got played managed to get into the charts because of the airplay being taken into account.
Yeah.
And Deep Obsession. So they had, three number one hits in a row, which was unheard of at that time.
Cold, One and Only, and Lost in Love. Lost in Love was a cover, I think.
Yeah, that's the Air Supply song, isn't it, I think.
True Bliss, of course.
True Bliss, yes. Their television career definitely helped them along.
And probably the most enduring of the songs in that era was Lydia by Fur Patrol.
Yes, that's a wonderful song. And, I mean, I kind of think this is a little bit of an unusual one as well. It's not an obvious pop song. The lyrics just kind of grabbed people, I suppose, because they were a bit of a rockier band. That was the year 2000. You had Stella and Tadpole. Mm-hmm. They were quite rocky bands, fronted by women as well. And Lydia wasn't your conventional... I mean, Fur Patrol weren't your conventional band either. They were kind of on the rock side too.
Let's just remind people what that track sounded like. Julia Dean and Fur Patrol, Lydia. That one made, what's that?
Julia's gone on to do very well for herself.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, wonderful.
Hey, Julia. And it reminded me that that song made that Nature's Best APRA voted top 100 New Zealand songs, and I was about to have a look at how many other females there were on it, but it might be a bit depressing.
Oh.
Beck Runga at number 6.
Sharon must be in there, surely.
Pixie Williams at number 17, cool. Lydia at 19, Beck Runga at 21, Shona Lang 24, The Crocodiles at 26. That was a female single, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jenny Morris.
Yeah. That's it. So 5 in the top 30.
Oh, interesting.
Renee Jones is with us. If you want to take a sort of longer listen or a deeper look, her website Audio Culture is the place to go. A couple of other mentions. So the 2000s, we should mention that Carly Binding, who left True Bliss, did some really some pretty good songwriting in that little period, right?
She did, actually. She was definitely a talent in her own right. Mm. And she had a cool image as well. You know, she just presented really well, and girls loved her.
Yeah.
I thought she was really cool.
Brooke Fraser, of course.
Brooke Fraser was a big... a big sort of watershed moment too when she came on the scene. That was when there were, new young women were coming through on a regular basis at this point. It was really exciting.
Okay, so Brooke Fraser had Better and Lifeline that went to number 3 and number 7, Arithmetic. And then this band that was just such a fun moment in New Zealand music culture, don't you think? Golden Horse.
Yeah, weren't they great?
Yeah.
I mean, again, I kind of look at them a little bit on the more alternative side. They started out on student radio, and then I'm always really impressed when a band starts out there and then just goes into the wider public. It's really interesting.
Another big crossover hit. This is Maybe Tomorrow.
The memory, all your sorrows.
Yeah, makes you want to get that Riverhead album out again, doesn't it?
It really does. How long did that stay on the charts? The album itself did incredibly well and stayed in the top 40 for over a year.
You know, and we haven't mentioned, Anika Moore.
Yes, of course. The wonderful Anika Moore. She was an interesting story. She was a bit of a teenage prodigy. And at that point, that was when the labels decided it was worth putting money into the artists to get them overseas as well. So through Warner Music, she got a deal with Atlantic Records in the US. But I don't think it quite turned out to be quite what she wanted. So she kind of came back to New Zealand and now she's doing what she does.
Anika Moore.
Yeah, that's right.
Lucky us. If your list hadn't stopped at 2005, who would you add to it?
There's quite a few people since then. Lorde, obviously.
Yeah.
Lady Six has had 3 top 10 albums. Gin Wigmore, if you remember Annabelle Faye, she got the top 10.
Yep.
Ruby Frost, Kimbra, and Zoe did as well. So there's a few ladies since then that have done very well in terms of top 10 single and
Lady Hawk,
absolutely.
Hey, go have a bit of a finger through the list yourself. You'll find it on the Audio Culture website, which is no doubt linked from our website as well. Renee Jones, thank you for taking us through it.
My pleasure. It's been great.
Yeah, sharing some of your own memories with us. Come back in again sometime.
Will do.